Thank you for downloading this episode in the Harm Reduction Coalition podcast series. My name is Alan Clear, and I work for the Harm Reduction Coalition. This week, I talked to Ro Giuliano, who was one of the founders of the San Francisco Needle Exchange, and she ran that for a number of years. And we got together to talk about using heroin alone, because that was one of the big talking points following the death of Philip Seymour Hoffman. And we wanted to explore that a little bit further. Hi, Ro.
Hi, Alan.
Why do people use heroin alone? Let's get into that.
I think people use alone for a lot of reasons, and I think people often forget why that might be. So, I mean, for some people, just think about anything that you might do alone and why you do those things alone. You know, if you meditate alone, do yoga alone, take a walk alone, it for some people, it's the same thing. It's an intimate experience that you want to be alone with and having. Maybe it's that extreme quiet. Maybe for someone, it's just the peace that that drug and doing that drug alone gives them, that extreme quiet, that extreme peace. And it's better when no one else is involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that, and yet, using that comparison, it's like, I mean, people do come home, turn on the television, whatever, you know, have a couple of glasses of wine, because that's what they do, and they don't have to be social about this. This is something, you know, for someone using alone, it's just so much more pleasurable to do something you really love completely by yourself.
Yeah, and I think the word pleasure is really key there, and I think it's a really intimate experience. And a lot of times the pleasure and the intimacy gets discounted, and people don't take that into consideration. And I don't know what happened in this specific case, but it could have just been that he just wanted to get high, good and high, an enjoyable experience by himself, rather than, you know, all this disease and sadness and, you know,
and demons.
Demons and all these other things that get tossed about. You know, people do drugs many times because they're enjoyable. People just like to get really high, and people have been getting really high since the dawn of people, you know. So you start pathologizing the human condition, and that's my opinion on that anyway. I have a lot of mixed feelings about that in general, but I don't think you should take the pleasure out of the drug experience. And I think you lose something when you do that, or when you're trying to understand why people use.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. And it's, I mean, we should take it away from the Philip Seymour Hoffman thing, because it's not really about that so much as about our reaction to a very prominent death. But it is, I was struck that it was Sunday morning, right? And to my way of thinking, it's like, yay, it's Sunday morning and I'm by myself and I've got some time here and I can get high. And I can just enjoy this experience. I've got nothing on my plate. I got nothing to do today. And if I get high early this morning, by early evening, I'll be, you know, I can get ready for the following day. And that's what struck me when it happened. It's like, this was something that's very, very normal behavior for many, many people. I mean, not, that makes sense. Like, injecting heroin is a very, very normal behavior for many, many people, which it actually is. But doing something pleasurable all by yourself on a weekend is incredibly normal.
And I think with, you know, a drug like heroin, it takes you to a very specific place that I don't know other drugs necessarily get you to that same place. And so when you're trying to get, when you enjoy that very dream-like, separate, quiet experience, and that's where you want to go, heroin's really good at getting you to that space. And there is pleasure involved. People start, you know, most people start using drugs from a place of pleasure.
We then very, very quickly pathologize that drug use. Drugs play multiple functions in people's lives, and we always, always downgrade the pleasure of it all. And that's sort of a ridiculous thing to just leave out of the equation, because it's the reason why we take drugs to begin with.
Yeah, and I think that's where I think it's so important for people to realize that sometimes people just want to get really, really high. Like, people like to do that in all different ways, you know, and And there are consequences sometimes to those things that people get off doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people get off big wave surfing. Doesn't mean that people haven't died at Mavericks in California, big wave surfing. I mean, there's, you know, not to draw such a parallel, but, you know, these are things we find pleasurable, and there may be risk, large risk. And sometimes I think, you know, maybe as human beings, sometimes a little bit of danger in that pleasure is what you're going for, and maybe that's what makes that experience pleasurable.
Yeah, it adds that edge to it.
You know, folks that choose heroin, there's tons of other drugs that you could choose, but you've chosen heroin at that particular time to get you to a certain place. I guess that's what I was talking about, saying, like, getting you to that certain place. You know, you could choose smoking weed, but it's going to take you to a very different place and a pretty safe place. And for some folks, maybe they need that little bit of danger. Or for me, I've always thought about it like that. There is a romance with heroin and death and something about that, but not in a way that comes from the suicidal place, but in this other kind of poetic, romantic place that people put it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a romanticism to certain drugs, and heroin has that romanticism linked. And I think we were talking about this a minute ago. I don't know that that's necessarily true for every single person that uses heroin, but it's certainly true for a sizable amount of people who have used heroin and have found a romanticizing element to it. I mean, it's all throughout the history of art. It's always part of the edge when it comes to heroin and art. So it's not something that can be denied. I mean, putting this into like a harm reduction lens too, the sort of message we put out there is don't use alone, right? And how does that fly? I mean, we used to say don't say don't.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. And then it starts, when you keep saying don't get high alone, don't get high alone, it starts to really feel like just say no. And putting that negative spin on it. And then the message loses its meaning, right? So you're saying to someone, don't get high alone, when their whole trip is getting high alone.
Yeah.
And so now it's just a meaningless thing. And so how do we take what we were talking about and understanding people's drug experience and having a meaningful conversation then about keeping people safe?
Yeah.
And I don't think it looks like saying don't get high alone, because I think it's, for some people that works, and for some people it doesn't make sense anymore to say that.
I guess there's two ways I look at that. One is that if someone has been provided the best possible information and they have assimilated that information about how to use as safely as possible, because we're not talking about safe use because it doesn't really necessarily exist, but say as safely as possible, they've done everything they can, an overdose and a death can still happen. And that's just a horrible, tragic accident. But it can happen. And so really it's about getting a person as much information as they possibly can to have the best drug experience they can, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, I think there are just a few of those messages that happen, especially when we talk about overdose, right? So don't get high alone. And you could even go into the whole like tester shot scenario, which for a lot of people isn't realistic either.
Yeah.
And so to just, not to be careful with it, but how can we have a more meaningful dialogue than saying don't get high alone, because people are going to get high alone.
Yeah.
And not to pin all, for me, not to pin all your hopes on naloxone, because that's not always going to save the day, and there isn't a magic bullet, and it's just part of heroin. Like, people will die of overdoses.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily mean everything that people want it to mean.
I guess one thing to think about is, when if you were a, well, actually you don't have to be a social service, if you are interacting with someone who uses, either a social service provider or they're just a friend or relative, it's actually getting an understanding from them how they like to use. And if they like to use alone, that's information to have, and to help people work through that stuff or think through it, or not to denigrate it and not to say, oh, you shouldn't do that.
And I think that's what becomes difficult for people, right? Mm-hmm. Because people are kind of programmed to pathologize it to an extent that it is a negative experience.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to have, for some people, to have that conversation about the pleasure aspect of it and how someone uses, without putting judgments on it, without saying, don't do this, don't do that. And how do you have those conversations so it can be more meaningful?
Yeah, I think that's the trick. This is why I was interested in talking to you about this too, because we don't talk enough about the pleasure. We don't talk enough about the real reasons as to why people use alone. That those reasons are valid. That they're, you know. So if we don't have those sort of awkward conversations, which shouldn't really be awkward, then we're not really doing our job.
No, and I think, like, you could, for me, I could draw a parallel with safer using and vein care.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those interventions work really well because you are working on that pleasure aspect. No one likes to use a dull needle.
Mm-hmm.
It feels better to use a brand new one. No one likes to mess up their veins. So when you're teaching all those skills to someone, it's all based on this is going to make your high better.
Mm-hmm.
And so to frame it, and it worked because you're framing it in that way. But that was very controversial for some people, and even difficult for some people doing harm reduction work to even have those conversations, to sit there.
Yeah.
Like for me, you know, I did it for a really long time, to sit there with a 15-year-old at the drop-in center and be like, okay, let's work on how you can get high. How can we make the getting high experience better? And that's a difficult place for a lot of people to put themselves in.
Yeah, but those are important conversations to have. So thank you for having this conversation today.
Thank you, Al.
Thank you, Ro, and thank you guys for listening, and we'll be back shortly.